WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, where hundreds of researchers make new discoveries inspired by the work of previous Dana-Farber scientists. Learn more about their momentum at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the edition in which we attempt to set the record for the most public radio listeners reciting many digits of pi at the same time, because today is Pi Day, 314. Call in if you would like to take part later on at 212-433-WNYC. We have Governor Cuomo today to talk about some of this week's developments in charter school and pre-K politics, and we'll debate the word bossy. Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg and the Girl Scouts want it banned from childhood because it discourages girls from aspiring to be the boss, they say. But, oh, the pushback they're getting for trying to ban bossy. We'll see what you think. But first, stops and frisks under Police Commissioner Bratton, down. People arrested for selling churros on the subway, apparently up. The churro-selling arrest, as described by a legal aid lawyer to the New York Times, is part of a crackdown by the new commish on low-level subway crimes as a means of preventing more serious crime. Subway peddling and panhandling arrests have tripled compared to the first couple of months of last year, while stops and frisks have plummeted. So have murders and robberies, by the way. Let's get some context from veteran crime reporter Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor of the local news website DNA Info. Then we'll hear an objection to the new strategy from a group of lawyers called the Bronx Defenders. Hi, Murray Weiss. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So the subway peddling and panhandling crackdown is surprising to a lot of people. In an interview with Channel 11, Bratton said a little about who he's going after. Listen.
But the issues of concern are those quality of life issues, the acrobats, the aggressive begging, people manipulating the swipe cards and the turnstiles. We're going to be having significant focus on those issues, that you will see more police and you'll see them more aggressively going after those so-called quality of life issues, which create fear, frustration, and sometimes anger.
Bratton on Channel 11 last week. Murray Weiss, do you get the larger game plan here?
I think I do. Bill Bratton was the transit police chief before he became the New York City Police Commissioner back in 1993. And the reason he became the New York City Police Commissioner is because he did such a great job in the transit system. And as you know, he's a big proponent of the broken windows theory. You stop little crimes, the people who are committing little crimes are the people who generally are also about to or will be or do the larger crimes. Secondarily, you may recall at the same time, in New York City, when Bratton became the police commissioner, there were the squeegee men around town who were, you know, basically mauling motorists and forcing them to cough up money while they wipe windows. Well, the point of that turned out to be there weren't really that many squeegee people, but they were at key locations. You know, there'd be guys at 57th Street and the West Side Highway. There'd be some when you come off the FDR Drive at Houston Street. Anyway, so every motorist had the perception that there was disorder in New York. And I think what Bill Bratton's doing in his first weeks here is he's kind of bringing back that philosophy to the subway system that there's a perception of some unruliness down there. I ride the subways every day. There are singers and beggars and people playing music and, you know, all kinds of stuff without licenses. And I think, you know, even when I ride it, one guy begs, and then another guy begs, and one gets off and says, I'm not that guy, I'm this guy. So I think maybe he's trying to get a handle on that.
Although this isn't exactly 1987. I mean, it's not to, I mean, you didn't say you feel threatened down there, which one might have said at that time. You feel this, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of people feel it, that there is this kind of parade of people asking for money in one way or another, just saying they're homeless and telling their story, or they're doing songs and dances. But I don't think people are associating that with crime so much as they might have when Bratton first came to town.
I agree with you. I was going to make a point, however, that, you know, this sense that cracking down on small crimes, I did a story, an analysis story of crime data a few months ago that said that the number of arrests in New York under the Kelly era were at historic highs, even though our jails aren't jammed with people. But the number of people that were being arrested and put through the system was in those, you know, like 400,000 arrests in 2012, for example. So the police department hasn't, like, given up on making minor arrests in New York. But I think he's turning attention to this. I think it's part of his plan. I don't think they're out to necessarily harass people, but I think he feels, you know, he spoke for himself. I think this is one component of his bigger, you know, Bill Bratton imprint on the police system.
Listeners, what's happening on the subway so far this year? Help us crowdsource this story. Are you a subway performer with or without a permit? Are you one of those teenage acrobats or a woman selling churros? What's changed for you down there? Or are you a writer who sees a change or doesn't, who wants a change or doesn't care? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. With Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor of DNA Info. Do you know anything about the churros caper?
No, you tell me. And
well, it's just a reference in the Times to a woman being arrested for selling churros. You know, again, it's not exactly the people who approach Bernie Goetz. In that clip, Bratton mentioned subway acrobats as a target. Many of us have seen those kids doing their gymnastics on the cars, then
right,
passing the hat. And, you know, they could lose their balance and fly into you if the train hits a nick in the rail at just the wrong moment, I guess. But those performing teenagers are not anyone's idea of the crime problem in New York City. Again, I don't think. So why would Bratton even mention them in a television interview?
That I can't, you know, I think the word from his perception, I'm not speaking for him, I think his concept here is a little bit of disorder, that there's a sense of disorder. I don't, you know, hit that must. I know he rode the subways the other day. The other night he took a short ride around midnight to begin to get a sense of his own. I would assume that the people who work for him that are traveling around the city, you know, the mayor has, the police commissioner has, you know, a unit of people who actually go around New York and try to find areas of problems in the city. He must be hearing that the complaints around from the transit system, in spite of what we're talking about here, is the subway riders feel that there's disorder down there. There are certain lines. We had a terrific story at DNA recently about the homeless and the volume of homeless people who are riding, say, the E line that ends out in Queens.
Yeah.
When the train pulls in there.
Saw that.
Some of the cars are filled with homeless people. I mean, obviously it's a problem. You need to get social services for these people. But on the same note, the people who are living out there are very upset that they're riding the trains with, like, so many people who are homeless. And there seem to be a lot more homeless in the subway system lately. Obviously, the cold has driven a lot of them down there.
Absolutely. And Bratton didn't mention that I saw, did he? So it's more about people's behavior than just being homeless and sleeping on the train. I live at the end of the A line, so I see the same thing this year. But mm-hmm. It's, you know, was he talking about that? Is the police commissioner on that?
I think the police department was part of the a plan. There was a plan, actually, to do sort of a homeless outreach, you know, quote-unquote sweep of the subway, the end of some of the subway lines, to begin to get the homeless out, you know, in conjunction, of course, with various social service agencies. But that plan was halted, actually, after we publicized that there was going to be this attempt on it. Some of the homeless advocates were very concerned about how the approach was going to take place. I think he's aware of the homeless thing, but I think the issue for him, I can't speak for him, but I think it's a sense that there's a bit of disorder that he wants to get some control over. Now, maybe this could be, you know, Bratton 2 is coming back with Bratton 1 concept, and you can say, you know, this isn't the same era. And, in fact, Ray Kelly made a tremendous mistake while he was the commissioner here by not recognizing that we were living in a safe city. But he continued with many oppressive policy programs like stop and frisk, rather than recognizing that crime was down and we don't need to keep stopping and frisking people. He put his, you know, pedal to the metal, and he accelerated it. And obviously it reached a point where the public erupted. It helped get de Blasio elected. And it wound up with the police department having an inspector general and the prospects of a federal monitor. So
right.
Mr. Bratton is bringing something back, but I don't think he's going to be onerous in it. I think he's a much more tempered personality.
And at the same time, he's almost eliminated stops and frisks since he came in. He's pulled a lot of rookie cops, he says, off some of the beats where they might alienate the public. So he's working on these various tracks at the same time. Let me take a call from David in Yorkville, who I think had an experience that leads him to conclude not all those subway acrobats are so benign. David?
Yeah, they're not benign at all. I was on a rush hour train, and I'm almost 70. And I've already been hit by an illegal commercial bike, so I've got an injury that, if it's aggravated, could put me in the hospital. And these guys are doing—I mean, we're talking about a 170-pound grown young man flying through the air, swinging on the handles with his buddies flipping him up in the air, and he's right in front of me. And I said, "Please, please don't do it here." And he said, basically cursed me out and said, "You don't want to get hurt, stay out of the way," and controlled the entire center of the car. People just had to back off. This is not acceptable.
That's not fun.
It's not acceptable. And I was delighted to see notice in the Post of the arrest of some people doing this kind of acrobatic stuff. It's just not acceptable.
David, thank you. Jennifer in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I am actually a former panhandler as well as former homeless person that had to use the trains as far as shelter goes. And in the performance to be able to make money on the trains, I think that it's a history in New York that shouldn't be taken away by people who are very, very needy. This police commissioner is coming in, rich guy, and saying, "Hey, look, I don't care about the homeless people. I don't care about people that are in poverty. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to do damage to them." And by enforcing the law that they haven't enforced, they're doing damage to people that are extremely, extremely needy and cannot put food on their table.
What about the story that the previous caller just told of the physical danger from the acrobats taking over the train?
I don't know what the statistics are for people getting hurt from the acrobats, the young people that are doing performances like that. I find that entertaining. To take that away is to take away some entertainment from our city. Sure, there probably is a small element of danger that's involved there. I've never seen anybody get hurt.
Jennifer, thank you very much. Murray, do we know what the law is here? Because we're going to talk to the Bronx Defenders Group in just a minute, who had a legal victory a couple of years ago against the NYPD in a big loitering class action suit where they charged them with unconstitutionally stopping a lot of people who were loitering, but legally here and there around the city. Is it illegal to panhandle in the subway? Is it illegal to come into a subway train car with a guitar and sing a song and ask for money, or just walk up and down the car, tell your story about being homeless and ask for money?
Well, the simple answer is that begging in the subway system is against the law. And actually, there are announcements that you can hear, "Please don't give money to people. It's against the law." So that's a simple reality. But police work, believe it or not, is a delicate, you know, balance of, you know, when is somebody's rights being violated by the police, or, you know, to what extent they have rights and to what extent does the person sitting there have rights. Begging, however, is against the law. So can a guy play a guitar? I guess he can. But at what point is it a nuisance and you're loitering and you're in violation of various other, you know, rules of the city of New York? That's the simple fact. Obviously, issues like homelessness, these are very complicated issues. You know, I the woman who just spoke here, very eloquent, made a very, very good point. You know, I don't think the police are unsympathetic to the complexity of people who are impoverished and in need of money, and a lot of people who have very significant psychological problems that are homeless in the subway system.
And we could give some of them lie detector tests about their tales of woe.
Yeah, but, you know, the police are in the position of adhering to the law and carrying it out. They're not, you know, they try to have homeless units. They try to work with social service agencies. But ultimately, their function is to, you know, carry out the laws of the city of New York to keep order.
Now, Bratton's reputation, and we'll see if he can maintain it this time around in New York, is of establishing very good relations with low-income and people of color communities. You know, that was the big task in L.A. when he went in there after he was in New York, as you well know. Relations with the communities were so bad, and he managed to largely turn them around. And here, at the same time that this crackdown on panhandlers and performers in the or peddlers in the subway is going on, stops and frisks have fallen off a cliff. 6,000 by this time last year, 300 so far this year. So if that's going to let crime go up, by the way, as stop and frisk advocates fear, it's certainly not an immediate relationship. So before you go, anything to analyze there yet? And how would you put the stop and frisk plummeting in terms of numbers and violent crime continuing to go down, which could be more a result of the polar vortex than anything else? I don't know.
Well, you know, there could be, like, that's true.
Along with this subway thing.
You know, it's like in the financial world, they there's like leading indicators, and then there's indicators that are after the fact. You know, I think that crime is continuing to fall because it's down, and the city is a different city. The demographics are different. The communities are different. I think if you look at the police department, by the way, I feel compelled to say this, but, you know, the police department has brought down crime in every community in this city over the past 20 years. You know, there's no tale of two cities when it comes to that. The crime levels, they have distributed their resources everywhere to bring it down. And I think we're living through the aftermath of that, the continual residual results of really some very terrific policing. One aspect of it that wasn't terrific, as I mentioned before, and we're talking about stopping and frisking. I think the numbers of stopping and frisk has come down dramatically, and they've come down to more historic levels. And perhaps they'll start adjusting it where the number of stop and frisk will actually go up a little bit, but the impact of that on community relations won't be felt. That people will feel that the police are doing their job, they're doing it in a way that's effective, not just in fighting crime, but in not damaging the relationships between the police and the community.
Murray,
I think
what?
Bratton's committed to that. He's gone to meetings. I think he's sending the right tone on those points, and I think he's committed to making that happen. Clearly, you know, he's working for a mayor who wants that to happen, and
indeed,
I think his history shows that he's very effective in doing that.
Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor for DNA Info. Thanks a lot.
Pleasure being here, Brian.
And with us now is Robin Steinberg, founder and executive director of the Bronx Defenders, lawyers who represent poor people in the northernmost borough. Robin, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
And by way of background, I mentioned this before, your group got the NYPD to settle a big class action suit in 2012 on behalf of 22,000 people who were arrested for loitering. Tell us about that case.
Well, along with the civil rights firm of Emery, Chelley, Brinkerhoff, and Abadie, the Bronx Defenders brought a suit against the NYPD once we recognized that there were arrests going on across New York City of people under a statute that had already been declared unconstitutional. So people were being arrested for loitering for the purposes of begging and loitering in transportation facilities and being unable to give an explanation for their presence in those transportation facilities. Those subdivisions of that statute, which is Penal Law 240.35, had been declared unconstitutional back in the 1970s by a federal court. Despite that fact, the NYPD for over a decade were arresting tens of thousands of people under statutes that had been declared unconstitutional earlier. So indeed, in 2012, we did settle a class action lawsuit along with our partners at Emory and Shelley Brinkerhoff and Abbey on behalf of 22,000 people who were illegally arrested.
So that's loitering with the alleged intent to panhandle, which somehow police thought they could discern, out of the brains of the people who were loitering. But wouldn't there be a difference under the law between that and actual panhandling or actual selling on the subway, which, as we just heard, is against the law?
Well, there's a different subdivision of the same statute, right? And that subdivision is Subdivision 6. And it does make a person guilty of loitering when they're loitering in a transportation facility for the purposes of soliciting or engaging in a business, trade, or commercial transaction, which does involve the sale of merchandise or services, or for the purpose of entertaining people by singing, dancing, or playing a musical instrument. So there is that statute on the books, and that statute does, prescribe that conduct. That having been said, the fact that it's on the books and the fact that it prescribes a certain kind of conduct doesn't make it good policy, right, to go after really our most vulnerable citizens and residents and neighbors, right? You're talking about people who are engaged in conduct, whether it's in a subway station, whether it's at a bus stop, that really is designed, right, to put together a little bit of income for people. There's no question, but the people who are playing guitars with their guitar case open, they're simply trying to get by with, get a little more financial means. So the question isn't really, I think, whether or not that's legal or not legal. I think the question is this a good use of our resources? Should we be targeting the most vulnerable people in our subway stations, many of whom are homeless, all of whom are poor, and most who come from communities of color and immigrant communities? Again, it's targeting the same groups, right, that we have, the criminal justice system has targeted in this city for a long time.
How much intrusion should subway riders have to put up with before it's a quality of life issue for the other New Yorkers? It can be a steady stream of people asking for money in one way or another, as you know.
I think that's a good question. I mean, look, policing should be about keeping us safe from harm, not from inconvenience, right? So that's the first threshold, I think. But it is true that at a certain point, inconvenience is something that affects everybody's quality of life. The issue is whether the strategy to deal with that is to arrest somebody, put them in handcuffs, throw them in a jail cell, keep them in a jail cell for at least 24 hours and sometimes more, and then make them come back to court continually for months after that. I think the other thing that gets lost in the narrative of these are just minor infractions is that these are real human beings behind these arrests. And these are parents and children and brothers and sisters who have families and children that they have to care for. And that while it might be a minor infraction, it's not minor to the person who's being arrested.
Are they really being put in jail, or are they being arrested, detained for a short time, given a summons for a violation as opposed to even a misdemeanor, and that's the end of it?
We're seeing both things. You're seeing people being arrested, put in handcuffs, which in and of itself is a fairly traumatizing, humiliating experience. Some people are being put through the system, which means at least a 24-hour, incarceration rate, and sometimes more. Nobody gets to see a judge before 24 hours once they're in. And what you're also seeing is these arrests, even though they are, Police Commissioner Bratton talks about them as minor infractions, they have long-term consequences for the people that are being arrested and convicted of these things, right? They have consequences for potential jobs. They have consequences for their children. They have consequences for school, right? They have consequences that last way beyond even that initial 24-hour arrest.
Mitchell in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello. Mitchell, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I had spoken to your screener earlier, and I was informing her that I get on the train every day in the Bronx, and I get on at 3rd Avenue. And consistently, whether it's the weekend or it's during the day, there's 5 or 6 people always selling MetroCard rides. And there's 2 or 3 lookouts that are sitting on the station now. And then when I get off in Brooklyn, I see the same thing. I get off near Atlantic and Barclay, or Nevin Street right there, in the same situation. And this is a consistent thing. And sometimes you do feel threatened, because it's not one person or two. We're talking about a group of people doing this.
And how about that, Robin Steinberg from Bronx Defenders? A problem worth cracking down on? That was on Bratton's list.
Well, again, you know, how you crack down on this, I'm not actually here to say that, you know, these aren't annoying issues that we need to deal with. But when you use the criminal justice system, which is honestly probably the biggest, bluntest instrument you can possibly use, right, to solve these problems, rather than bring people together, identify solutions to these quality of life issues, which are almost always related to poverty and lack of access to resources. Instead, this policy of cracking down and using the criminal justice system and arrests and criminal convictions just continues the trend of criminalizing the poor and low-income communities of color.
Before you go, stops and frisks are down to so few they're almost gone, as we discussed earlier. Is this a trade-off that you would say is at least a net plus for law-abiding poor people in New York City?
You know, I would say that it's a false choice. You know, the abuse of stop and frisk under the last administration severely damaged the relationship, obviously, between the NYPD and low-income communities of color in New York City, and that's going to take a very long time to repair. But arresting people and targeting, again, low-income communities of color and immigrant communities in subways for things that really reflect poverty, not criminality, is not really going to help in repairing that damage. It's coming together and trying to solve these problems and understand why people are doing what they're doing and coming up with solutions, community-based solutions, I think that will mend those wounds.
Robin Steinberg, founder and executive director of Bronx Defenders. Thank you for coming on with us.
Thank you.
And as crime continues to drop in most categories in the city under the de Blasio administration so far, one area of violent crime where the numbers have not gone down is domestic violence. We will talk next with the Manhattan District Attorney, Cy Vance, about that. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.